WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. After weeks of declining or holding steady, new COVID-19 cases are up in Virginia. As police search for a missing woman this week in Shenandoah National Park, a murder case from 25 years ago in the park gets new attention from the FBI and the Innocence Project. And we share another local StoryCorps conversation today between the co-founders of the Native American Church of Virginia. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, July 21st. After declining or holding steady for weeks, new COVID-19 cases in Virginia were up 14% last week. In the week ending Sunday, 1,826 cases were reported statewide. That's up from 1,601 new cases the week before. Virginia's 14% increase is still mild compared to the uptick of 66% nationwide. As a proportion of population, the worst outbreaks in the state were in Craig, Charles City, and Nottoway counties. Those are all places outside the WMRA area. Health officials say the rise in cases is mostly caused by the new Delta variant, which they say is more contagious than previous strains of the virus. The Virginia Department of Health encourages everyone eligible to get vaccinated. Nearly 60% of Virginians have received at least one dose, with about 53% fully vaccinated. VDH is a financial supporter of WMRA. Officials are searching for a missing woman in Shenandoah National Park. Park personnel, along with the Virginia Department of Energy Management and the Albemarle Sheriff's Office, are conducting the search. Julia Christine Devlin was last seen in Charlottesville on Wednesday, July 14th. Her white Lexus sedan was found on Skyline Drive in Shenandoah National Park last Saturday, July 17th. Ms. Devlin is 55 years old, 5 feet 7 inches tall, 150 pounds, and has dark blonde hair. If you have seen Ms. Devlin or if you have any information about her disappearance, contact the Albemarle County Sheriff's Office at 434-972-4001. It's been 25 years since two young women were found dead at their campsite in the park. The FBI has now posted signs there hoping to generate leads. But the Innocence Project in Charlottesville has another idea. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman reports.
Investigators tried for months to figure out who had killed Lolly Winans and Julie Williams, without success, according to Deirdre Enright, who headed the Innocence Project at UVA.
Meanwhile, in 96-97, there were six other murders in Central Virginia, like in a five-mile radius.
Police thought they might be dealing with a serial killer, but ended up charging three different men with the crimes.
All three of those turned out to be the wrong people.
Then, in 2003, a new suspect appeared.
There's a guy named Richard Ivanitz who's just tried to abduct a girl in South Carolina. She gets away.
Police tracked Ivanitz to Florida, where he told his sister he had killed many more women. But when officers closed in, Ivanitz killed himself. Because his known victims had been teenagers, detectives branded him a pedophile and eliminated him as a suspect in the killing of Winans and Williams. Enright thinks that was a mistake, that kids were not his only obsession.
If you go through his pornography, like I did, you would know that that is not the only thing he is interested in.
Now she's calling on the FBI to compare DNA from the National Parks murders to DNA from Ivanitz. The Bureau did not respond to our request for an interview. I'm Sandy Hausman.
Lawmakers are returning to Richmond to figure out how to spend more than $4 billion of federal stimulus money, also with Virginia Public Radio. Michael Pope has this preview.
Democrats are quietly negotiating behind the scenes in advance of the special session next month. Now, the governor has already announced some of his priorities, including grant programs for small businesses, money for tourism, and investments into broadband. But that still leaves a lot of room for interest groups to advocate. Barry Duvall at the Chamber of Commerce says some of that federal stimulus cash can be used to help businesses.
We think that keeping the cost of having employees down is important, and history has shown federal dollars have often been used to restore the unemployment trust fund. Without this, the cost to employ someone is significant.
Critics say making a large deposit into the unemployment trust fund could prevent business taxes from going up, but they say that should be balanced against spending that could help families. Chris Wadica at the Commonwealth Institute says investments into public education should be focused on getting the best bang for the buck.
There has been a concern that the funds are really mostly directed toward upgrades and renovations as opposed to new construction. And I know that's something that some folks in the education world are concerned about because they see that as maybe the wrong priority.
He says lawmakers could help fill in the gaps in federal stimulus programs, helping families that weren't eligible for stimulus checks or people who were excluded from expanded unemployment benefits. Michael Pope.
12 women filed a lawsuit Tuesday against Liberty University. They accused the Christian institution in Lynchburg of a pattern of mishandling cases of sexual assault and harassment and fostering an unsafe campus environment. The federal lawsuit filed in New York makes various claims under Title IX, the federal law that protects against sex discrimination in education. The women, identified only as Jane Doe 1 through 12, allege that Liberty's strict honor code makes it difficult or impossible for students to report sexual violence. It claims the university had a tacit policy of weighing investigations in favor of accused male students. And it said the university retaliated against women who did make such reports. Liberty said the allegations are deeply troubling and that it will do what's necessary, quote, to make things right. The Virginians for Affordable Medicine is a new coalition of patients, advocates, and physicians. Participant Cynthia Gonzalez-Luna has type 1 diabetes and relies on expensive insulin injections and other medical supplies. She says she can't pursue the career opportunities she'd like for fear of losing Medicaid.
No one's life should be waved over their head because they can't afford it. I know some kids are fortunate enough to have parents that pay for their health insurance or they're under a family plan. Sometimes I wish that were me, but I know I'm not alone.
The coalition is calling on Virginia House candidates vying for election this November to commit to lowering prescription medicine costs and supporting a prescription drug affordability board. Virginia's new attorney general is looking for the state's first cannabis attorney. Now that recreational marijuana use is legal, the new hire will serve as general counsel to the newly created Virginia Cannabis Control Authority and will assist other state agencies with regulations and laws regarding cannabis. The Office of Attorney General Mark Herring noted that legalization is expected to affect numerous areas of law, including criminal justice, health care and pharmacy, agriculture and land use, and taxation. Interested candidates can apply online. Finally today, as part of WMRE's conversation with StoryCorps, we're sharing another conversation today between Renee and Chris White, co-founders of the Native American Church of Virginia. Renee begins the conversation.
When I got out of the military in 2010, I realized that my people were still suffering. So I felt a need to take off my military boots and put my moccasins back on. When I was young going to school, what I was taught was that we as Indian people were savages. That's what I grew up thinking about myself. Before we were discovered, millions of our indigenous people lived here and our land was free. It was free to us and it was free to everyone. But I think one thing that Americans don't realize is that we are actually foreign nations within the United States. As I transition my conversation over to my husband, I just wanted to play a drum here for you just a little bit as I talk a little bit. There's an idea that's circulating of peoplehood, and that's why you can't separate our sovereign beings and our sovereign freedom of our religion from us to Americanize us in the way that this government has been trying to do for a long time. So I'm going to transfer over now to my husband, Chris, and he's going to tell you his story.
My story is about being forced from my homeland under threat of imprisonment or a torturous death. I want to preface this by saying that I'm not a victim, but I'm a direct descendant of Peregrine White, which was the first child born in New England on the Mayflower. And my mother's side is Cherokee. So I thought, I'm entitled, been here longer. So I started speaking out about Native American rights. I smoked marijuana. It was pretty open. There was an undercover cop who came to my house. I was living with my girlfriend. He wanted to buy some cannabis. I said, well, I'll make you a trade with something. Well, when I got to the crossroads, every deputy and even the sheriff converged on me. The sheriff called me back and he told me, if you don't get the F out of Frederick County, we're going to burn you. And the second week of March, my name came out in the paper as being indicted for selling marijuana. Then I went with my father to the sheriff's department. Well, I let the sheriff have it, but they didn't arrest me. So a little time goes by, and this time they came to where I was living. I turned myself in, and I went to trial. Well, they found me guilty, and they brought in a bag of cannabis, which it looked like they had used that over and over again. District attorney suggested 40 years. So I was out on $1,000 bond, so I left. We went to Texas because there was supposed to be work in the oil fields down there. My wife's family was in the process of moving out to Oregon. Nothing was going on for us, really, so we moved to Oregon with them. And I was out there for about 2 years living as a fugitive. And the attitude of people, if they know that you are wanted by the law or something like that, it's their duty to turn you in. After 2 years of that, my wife left me. I got pulled over on a routine traffic stop. They found out that I was a fugitive. And Virginia was coming after me with full force. And I had nobody that would stand up for me. But I read in the Bible where it says, in the last days, they'll put you in jail. And on the 10th day, you'll be let out. Well, that happened for me. I got out on the 10th day. When they looked into my case, there was a lot of iffies. And then drove back myself to Virginia to face these charges. Turned myself in. The good old boy attorney, once I got in his office, he called the district attorney and says, guess what I've got for you? I've got Chris White. And it's like, I've just been handed over to the devil. Anyway, the laws had changed. Instead of the penalty being 5 to 40, it was now 1 to 5. The judge gave me the same thing. He gave me the maximum. He gave me 5 years because that's the most he could give me. In my trial, this is what they asked me. Where are you going to live? So I knew what my story was. I said, I've got a life in Oregon. And so I got the 5 years and then got out and did parole in Oregon. Never saw a probation officer. They just never contacted me. So that's, the story goes on, but that's the long of it.
Would you like to listen in on the song? I've got a song. It's When a Woman is Facing the Sun and to Welcome the New Day. It goes like this. When they are home, when they are home, hey, 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 hey,
hey. Renee and Chris White, co-founders of the Native American Church of Virginia. To hear a longer version and more StoryCorps conversations, visit WMRA.org. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Wednesday.